Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome, our Vachon listener, to the Reality is Overrated edition of the Brown Briefly. In our striving for progressive persuasion, we are faced with an unrelenting wall of fiction, and we thought that it would be appropriate to dive right in and just to share, revel in the ambiance of craziness that's going on all around us. So let us introduce our Brieflies today. First, we have Gail Kellner, who I thought during the creation oversaw the separation of Orcas, Lopez, and Vachon Islands so she could be a true island hopper. But she tells me she may have just looked over the shoulder of the creator. Gail, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. The winds are a-blowing here.
I look out my windows and I see leaves swirling. I think it's real. I think it's real, but you know, you just have to, I'll never know.
I found a wonderful quote that is so appropriate for your show. This was from John Rogan, and it is, if you ever start taking things too seriously, just remember that we are talking monkeys on an organic spaceship flying through the universe.
Fantastic. Well, a good allegory for us. Hey, we also today, Guardian of the Galaxy, Bruce Hallman, who personally separated the Red Sea waters, advised Lincoln at Gettysburg, and walked briefly on the moon. Bruce, how are you doing today? Oh, I think Bruce may have just frozen.
I don't know what happened. Oh, Bruce has frozen. Oh, no, there he is. Bruce, can you hear us?
I can. The windstorm's affecting my internet, so yes, I am here. Trying to remember the words that I gave to Lincoln, but there's something about preserving the Union and better angels of our nature and all those kind of things that will help us fight against this sort of lack of reality that we're seeing in the world today.
Well, you know, Bruce, I just looked just yesterday at the ranking of presidents from best to worst, and Lincoln is right up there. So you did everything needed to put him in the head of the line.
Thanks.
Let's see. We also today have Michael Shook, who we, as we all know, single-handedly constructed the Empire State Building and the Twin Towers and is currently building a highway to heaven in his garage, which I hear is nearing completion. Michael, how are you today?
I'm doing swell. Thank you, Kevin. I want to thank Bruce for his ability to forge those words and his graciousness by passing them on to Abe, you know, who was, well,
was
what can I say?
Struggling at the time.
The highway to heaven, it is approaching completion. I think I'm going to apply for some more grants, not only from the State Department of Transportation, but from the Federal Highway Commission. I need about another $18 million, but this is doable. This is doable, and it's infrastructure. And as far as the other buildings go, you know, I've never mentioned them because I just don't like to brag like that, you know. But it was fun building the Empire State Building single-handedly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
which I did.
Well, we're going to unveil your modesty. I would say the only thing is that highway to heaven, don't call it a bridge.
No, I don't want to do that. No.
Not a bridge. Okay.
I don't want to be accused of a bridge to nowhere or anything like that. But I have millions of people on board supporting me in that. And they're the same ones who wrote in my name on the ballots. I hate to do this, but as you know, I withdrew my presidential run. I withdrew from that race sometime much earlier, threw my support behind Biden-Harris ticket.
Weeping.
But my legions of supporters all across the nation and in Canada and Mexico said, we can't allow this to happen. So actually, I have found sources that reveal that millions and millions, possibly as many as a billion people wrote in my name on ballots. And I am actually now president.
You should file lawsuits.
Well, those are in the works.
All right.
Well, he's not.
You may call me Mr. President now.
You know, we've been suppressing the Mexican and Canadian vote for far too long. Well,
exactly.
That's all I can say. So in case our listeners joining us a little late, this is the Reality is Overrated version of the Brown Briefly, which we might have to mention a couple of times. But moving on, Lynn Kerrigan, as we most people really, if you had done your research, would know that she actually penned the drafts of three of the world's historically epic poems, including both of Homer's Odyssey and the Iliad, as well as the Epic of Gilgamesh. So Lynn, I'm so glad you could bless us with your presence today.
Thank you. I'm interrupting my reworking of my Midsummer Night's Dream. You know, you neglected to mention that I wrote Shakespeare's things too, along with Bacon. Me and Bacon do everything. So Bacon and I are currently working on a Thanksgiving's Night's Dream, you know, where everyone's walking around in a fugue state, trying to stop time, right? And asses are actually wearing veils and trying to marry the brides and, you know, keep our state going. So I really like this fugue state that we're in. It suits my purposes.
Well, Lynn, I have absolutely no evidence to back this up, nor have I ever heard it postulated, but I am a firm believer nevertheless that Shakespeare was a woman. And that's why we can't really historically trace his origins. That's why.
I'm telling
overlook
you, because
the
it
obvious.
Was me all along, time traveling.
Revealed
if Donald
here.
Trump can do it, I can do it.
Revealed here for the first time. That's awesome.
It was actually Wilhelmina Shakespeare.
That was the voice of Truman, our Zoomologist and sound engineer. And he's also best known for his ability to be launched into the sky with all the parts needed to build a 737, put them all together in midair, and maybe the most amazing thing is to fly that plane to his destination without any schedule delays.
Well, I'll tell you, there was a problem. Well, actually, there were two problems. I ended up with this bag of bolts left over, and I'm not real sure where they go. So don't tell anybody, okay, that there's a few bolts missing. And the other thing is I realized that I left out one big part that should have gone in the airplane.
Better not brandish that toilet roll paper. I hear there.
I could be attacked.
You know, commodities that are scarce now.
This is gold. I got gold right here in my hand. Yep.
That's right.
I sense that toilet paper roll that Truman is flashing on Zoom has got a line of people now outside the steam bus studio. Counting on windows. If we hear that noise,
you'll know.
Okay. And hey, I'm Kevin Jones, having arrived here from another planet on a spaceship, which is currently hidden in the woods near Lost Lake on Vashon. And don't mess with it if you find it. You don't want to touch it. I tell you, that would be bad if you did. So anyway, here we are again at our Reality is Overrated edition of the Brown Briefly. And we have several things to talk about. First of all, let's start with the election results. Why not? Who needs better fiction than the election results? So, you know, it's really intriguing that while the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency says the November 3rd election was the, quote, the most secure in American history, unquote. In the meantime, Trump lawsuits as of 3 days ago were like one win and 15 losses, but I hear he's up to like 20 losses or more now. And he's challenging in Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania. They've all been dismissed. And the Trump law firms are now withdrawing their support. So is this just, you know, Trump ego? Is it an attempt maybe to influence the Georgia runoff races? Or is this something that will actually transcend this administration and spill over into future administrations? What do we all think? What's Trump trying to do?
Dead silence.
Delay. Delay, I think.
He's trying to sell.
Well, you know, I'm finding the seeds of hope in some of this, which is that things like really paying attention to the security of our elections has become such a priority that thanks to people like yourself, Kevin, and many others are across the nation, that became a top priority. And hence we have a secure election that we truly didn't have in 2016. So I see seeds of hope that that's not something people at one time took for granted. We came close, we did lose that, and now we're moving back towards, if not complete fair and access for people to elections, at least there is a sense that they're secure. So I can thank Trump for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can actually thank the 2000 election and the hanging chads in Florida. I mean, what that did is it incentivized election officials all over the nation to develop secure election processes, to isolate them from the internet, and to basically create what resulted in the most secure election ever in American history. The other thing you touched on, Lynn, that's very appropriate about it is, even though the election's secure, having access to be able to vote is not. And that's the next sort of a big hurdle to overcome in the United States, that every citizen has equal access to the right to vote in ways that are acceptable and doable. Long lines wrapping around buildings and 5 or 6 hour waits to vote are just unacceptable in a modern democracy. So we've got a ways to go, but thanks to hanging chads in Florida, we have a secure election system. Now we just need to make it a fair and accessible election system. And
well, this is Lynn.
Let me jump in real quick and just say also the kudos to those people, Bruce, that you mentioned who stood in those lines for 5, 6, 7 hours. And there's one of those barriers to access to the ballot box. How many of those people had to arrange time off from work? That's just unconscionable in a modern democracy. We can do things so much better to so that people don't have to do that, suffer that way. Lynn, thanks for letting me dump that in there.
Well, I was going to go down a different rabbit hole, so it's all right. I was actually going to say, you know, for me, it feels like Trump buying time so he can have his minion lawyers and his minion Senate supporters calling around and trying, as I mentioned last week, to put pressure on the election office. I woke up this morning on NPR listening to, I think his name is Raffensperger, the electoral office head in Georgia, describing Lindsey Graham's calling him and talking about, weren't there ballots thrown out in a number of places because their signatures didn't match, and maybe there were a few more that could be found that could be thrown out. So I think Trump is flailing, not personally, but by sending his minions out to do his work right now.
So
until everybody gives up.
On USA Today, it's saying that the a federal appeals court ruling may have torpedoed several federal lawsuits that seek to overturn President Donald Trump's all but certified defeat by former Vice President Joe Biden. U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit ruled Friday that Pennsylvania voters and congressional candidate could not use certain constitutional arguments to back their claims that some voters were disadvantaged. Anyway, so basically it's saying that many of the lawsuits are being dismissed based on that Third Circuit of Appeals, and including Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Wisconsin. They voluntarily dismissed their claims.
Yeah, I'm losing is not a good legal defense.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, Gail and then Michael.
I was just going to say, I wonder how many more people would have voted had there been easier access to the polls. How many people were unable to stand in those long lines after an hour or two because, you know, they had small children with them or they had to go to work or any number of things, let alone places like in Texas, where I believe in, and Truman weigh in on this for me, but my understanding is that they set up a system where in you could only have one ballot drop box per county. And in one instance, that in these very heavily Democratic and urban counties meant in some cases that there were literally millions of ballots that would have to be dropped into a single ballot box.
I'm not sure that it was millions, but in the state of Texas is where they did that, where the governor made that
and
rule.
And that got overturned almost immediately.
Yeah, but they still ended up having just a single box. Many of them did.
They argued it and then said there would be no changes. That's my understanding, right. Too Correct. Close to the election.
Right.
Right. Michael, you had a comment.
Oh, I don't know. The whole Texas thing. I mean, I've only been in part of Texas, but my goodness.
Now be careful.
That is a gigantic state.
Be careful. That's my old home state. Yeah. By the way,
drive for hours and hours and hours and
still
just be
in the state.
Still in the middle of nowhere. So if you've got one ballot box in some of those counties down there, now I understand, as Cynthia remarked to me, you got to drive fast when you're down here because everybody's doing 80 or 90. Seriously, because you can't get anywhere unless you're either in a plane or you're driving at 90 in your vehicle.
But they do have great roads. You have to admit.
They do. Yeah, I was impressed. Great
roads. Flat roads.
They're flat and they're straight and they're smooth.
That oil money and that topography works.
And by the way, I just read an article this morning that my neighbor just from where I grew up, in fact, I still own some property down there in Loving County, is one of the few counties in the United States that does not have COVID. That's because there are only 169 people in the whole county.
Before we hand over to Bruce, I'm thinking you could fly an airplane down those roads.
Oh, I have. I've actually landed on one of those roads. Seriously.
Right.
Yeah. When I was a student pilot out in the middle of nowhere, my instructor pulled the engine on me and said, okay, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I could land on that road. He said, okay, go ahead. And we did. We landed on one of those roads.
You might be breaking our realities overrated to policy for the show today. But Bruce, what do you have in mind?
Oh, just I wanted to comment on what Gail was talking about in terms of and Michael about in terms of turnout. There are ways. We get in a very heavy election like the last one. We had something like 68-70% turnout, which is very high for the United States. In Australia and New Zealand, because Election Day is a holiday, because it's a legal requirement you vote, they get 97-98% turnout for votes. And they do it on a holiday. So it's there are ways to make the ballot box accessible to citizens. Just in the United States, since the very founding of the Constitution, which in itself limited people's ability to vote. You had to own property, you had to be essentially white to be a citizen. So we have a long, long history of limiting people's access to the ballot box. And it's up to us to make sure that changes quickly.
Absolutely. Well, let's see, continuing on for those just tuning in, this is the Reality is Overrated edition of the Brown Briefly. And what would a reality is overrated version, we wouldn't be able to have any credibility if we didn't mention that there is no COVID. It's we turning the corner. It's behind us. But wait a minute. In reality, it seems like now we are likely to have literally 250,000 Americans who have suffered COVID deaths before the end of this week. And the COVID death rate is startlingly increasing by by 1,000 a week. Every week that goes by, there's another 1,000 more people than the last week prior that have actually expired from COVID. And, you know, in most instances, people want to stay healthy. They look for guidance about how to do that. Parents want to protect their children. But now what we have is people rising up and protesting the use of masks. And some continue to espouse good diet, sleep, hand washing, and prayer while rejecting mask wearing. So in our reality, what is going on here? Please, what do we think? Michael.
We don't think anymore. We believe. It's not about thinking. What are you talking about, Kevin? God, I don't believe in COVID, so it's not there.
I just have to stand corrected. I thank you for keeping me on track here. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, but just kind of a echoing what Lynn just said, humans have never been renowned for their ability to think rationally. And this has been a long time coming. It's really difficult to look at the deaths and the suffering. And honestly, what I have read in some of the literature, what's going to turn out to be, there's a significant chance that the COVID virus that people caught has lingering effects. There's going to be possibly a significant minority of people who had COVID and who got over it in pretty good shape, who may find down the road that they are suffering from some kind of chronic fatigue, shortness of breath, other health issues. So it's very sad to me that we entered into this in such a polarized condition, and then it was deliberately, consciously made into a political football to the point where you have people in some parts of the country who have backgrounds, even in health education, refusing to wear masks, refusing to limit gatherings. I think this is going to go down as probably the worst domestic policy failure in our history, if not certainly in the last 150, 200 years. Well, that's our whole history practically.
It is.
important to remember that if you recall the S1N1 flu that came around, about 5-6 years ago? That was the Spanish flu. The same influenza that was in 1918, just a minor variation of it. So these things don't go away. They will be around. And in an alternative universe, it's not a problem. Some of us will live through it, some of us will not, but ultimately, as people, as a nation will go on, we'll just be diminished. And that's sort of the way to accept it. If you accept this alternative reality of masks don't really matter, gatherings don't really matter. It's the luck of the draw. It's like any other disease. You either get it or you don't get it. If you don't get it, you're lucky. If you do get it, you're unlucky. So,
well, with the results that they're getting from these vaccines, 90 to 94% effective, I think we've got a real good shot at least suppressing it for some period of time. Gail?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, when we're talking about people not believing in wearing masks, besides the obvious point that I think a couple, that most people are aware of is that it's simply become a political symbol. So wearing a mask is a sign of a liberal outlook, not wearing one a sign of a conservative outlook. But I think also this not believing in the virus is understandable when you take a look at it from the standpoint of a large segment of our population that don't believe in science, that are willing to accept news as when it's labeled fake, who take the Bible as a literal truth, who don't believe in climate change, it's not a far leap to not believe in COVID. It's just, you know, it's consistent with a lack of rigor in thinking. And to a large degree, I consider this a problem of education.
I love that term, a lack of rigor in thinking. They're stupid. Come on.
Michael, your thoughts.
Well, what Gail brings up is kind of, it, in a way, I want to kind of build on that because it's been something that's really been in the works for decades. For the last 40 years or so, we've had a strategy, I think largely on the right. I hate to say conservative or liberal anymore because I don't even know what those things mean. These are not my father's conservatives, but I think it's been a strategy on the right for a long time to, as we know, to demonize government. You know, Ronald Reagan characterized that with his phrase, you know, I'm going to say the 9 scariest words in the English language. I'm from the government. I'm here to help you. Well, that played upon some real things. The pendulum in many areas probably had swung too far in terms of different kinds of regulations or things. But to take a meat axe to the whole thing or to chop the whole tree down because it's got a few branches that need to be pruned is insanity. But it worked. And it's just gotten more polarized and demonized to the point now where you've got a large segment of the population that lives in a bubble of news that only conforms with its views. And that's true on the left as well. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't believe any of that, if it's all fake and the government is our enemy, some of those folks in Idaho that went against mask wearing and everything else said they don't even believe the coronavirus is real. It's not, there is no coronavirus. I don't even know what you do with that.
Yes. Lynn, maybe you can save us from this going.
Well, of course, me and bacon. Hey, you know, I'm just thinking we have lost some of the filters of propaganda, you know, that we knew a long time ago that when the major medias came out with, especially the bully pulpit, when the president can say anything he wants and people don't correct him all the time, we sort of lose that edge between what is being said that's factual and true with those boring facts, as opposed to what hypes people up and gets their heart pumping. And then that usually comes when somebody's self-interest is so involved they cannot hear the truth and they're shouting fake because it's against their interest. And that's happened for 3.5 years here.
It has. And you know, speaking of 3.5 years, as we're now within 60 some days of turning the page, going to the next chapter in American administrations, it's just intriguing that recently there have been assertions of progress that Trump has made in those 3.5 years. And oftentimes these gains are without any real specifics. And recently, for example, there were assertions that Trump got things done on immigration, terrorism, trade imbalance, the economy, and regulatory reform, but without actually saying what he got done. And so what do we think Trump was able to do in those particular areas? And have those changes endeared him to the American people? What do we think?
I have a comment on that. Deregulating reduction of regulations on, some areas. I know that in Texas, for example, earlier there was a, I'm trying to think of now what it was. Anyway, there was a lizard, a particular lizard that was put on the endangered list, and they were going to stop all exploration and production, oil production, in the areas where this lizard was prominent. And the people of Texas just went nuts. I mean, most of them did because of, but the rule stood. And so I know that one of the things that Trump did was to get rid of that and several other things like that. And that's one of the reasons that the people there are supportive of him, because he did, you know, fix some of those things that didn't wreck the economy, so to speak.
Gail? Yeah. Gail, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm thinking of regulatory reform and building off what you were saying, Truman. I think it depends on the side of, or the view that you take of regulation. Right. To me, regulation of capitalist interests is essential, not only for us as individuals, as consumers, but for the environment. Often a lizard like you're speaking of, you know, that is just an indication of an entire ecosystem that is in danger. And I look at like some recent moves in the last few weeks to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And I, things like that, I find very disturbing. I think some people are like, oh, that's great, you know, because they want to take this oil, they want to, but of course that's releasing more carbon into the atmosphere potentially, and certainly taking a pristine wilderness area and degrading it, millions of acres of it, millions. So it's quite, it's very disturbing to me what's being pushed through right now in a supposedly what should be a lame duck era or moment.
Mm-hmm.
And well, because of that, Gail, I think that those words highlighting the real and imagined accomplishments of Trump are for an audience of one. I think they are trying to soothe Trump's hurt feelings that he's lost and cajole him into remembering some of the things that he can claim some credit for. I think it's just them trying to make him feel better enough to be able to walk away.
Yeah, and I'm just really intrigued with the notion that somehow assertions can be made without substantiation, but somehow they seem to carry the day. For example, on the trade imbalance with China, in under Trump's first 3 years, that trade imbalance increased by $80 trillion compared to the last 3 years of Obama. We know that on terrorism, while claims made that Trump helped terrorism, Wikipedia says there's no actual reported foreign terror attacks on the U.S. soil since 2002, well before the Obama administration. But however, hate crimes have gone up 24% if you compare the first 3 years of Obama to the first 3 years of Trump. So it's just kind of intriguing that if we peel back the layers of the onion, if we look under the hood of these assertions, what we find is things that maybe don't really give us confidence that what Trump did get done are things that we would want him to get done. So, Bruce, did you have a comment?
Well, let me suggest an alternative reading of Trump has accomplished a lot of it bad, some of it good. And you know, we sort of go down that road of sort of condemning everything Trump has done at our own peril. You got to remember, you know, 49% of the people in the United States voted for him for a second term. What Trump has done essentially is changed the conversation. He's changed the conversation on immigration. He hasn't done a lot to move it one direction or the other. I mean, his short-term actions certainly have limited immigration and those kind of things. But what he's done is he's changed the conversation. He's changed the terms on which we talk about immigration and how we will look at immigration in the future. He's changed our the way we talk about China. You can look at the statistics, but in reality, you have to look at what's going to happen in the next 10, 20, 30 years with the United States and China. As China emerges as a dominant world power, and will the 21st century become China's century like the 20th century was America's century and the 19th century was Britain's century? I mean, those are the kinds of things that you have to step back from and sort of look at. And Trump has accomplished a lot. It's like looking back at Richard Nixon's presidency. Richard Nixon, probably one of the most despicable presidents after Trump that I can think of. And yet at the same time, the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, the Voting Rights, not the Voting Rights Act, but the opening China to American trade. I mean, Nixon accomplished some very, very good, positive kinds of things. I think what will come out of Trump, out of the negativities of Trump, you know, the increased hate crimes, the increased sort of violence in speech that becomes acceptable, out of those things will emerge a counterbalance that will begin to take us into a new future that will begin to limit those kind of things. We'll begin to redefine how we relate to China. We'll begin to redefine how we deal with immigration. We'll begin to redefine how we deal with climate change and with environmental regulations. So Trump, although it, you know, generally he's been a bad, bad influence and has done terrible damage to America around the world, at the same time, what will come out of it, I think, is some very, very real positives.
All right, well, Gail, and then we'll go to Lynn after that.
Yeah, I appreciate what you've shared with us, Bruce, and I agree. It's much of what some people term as accomplishments are the illusion of accomplishments, the illusion of having done something about immigration, the illusion of having done something about terrorism. And I think that in, to a large degree, is what people voted for. That did support him. They voted for the illusion that Trump created around these issues, as opposed to any actual change. Lynn?
Well, I was gonna say that, you know, I agreed with Bruce more than I didn't agree with him, because I think, you know, as you said, a half the nation voted for the man, and there's something they needed and wanted from him. And the thing that resonated most with me when he was campaigning to be president was bringing jobs back to America that had been lost to globalization. I think that fear, that issue within the heartland of America that's lost a lot of the high-paying manufacturing jobs and wages, I think that's real. And he touched on that. And he got us thinking about everything but that. In some ways, you know, I think his reach far surpassed his, you know, ability to execute some of that. But I think some of his aims were right on and righteous for people that depended on, you know, non-college educated required jobs. You know, the labor jobs that were in manufacturing have just been decimated.
Michael, thank you, Bruce, for elaborating on that, bringing up what you did there. One of the things I wanted to throw in there also was Occupational Safety and Health Act administration. That was another Nixon thing. The year he signed that, 14,000 plus workers in the United States died in on-the-job accidents. And that's staggering. We have a much larger labor force now, 50 years on, and fewer than 6,000 died. So that's pretty significant. The other thing it made me think of is like, wow, I love the Hindu symbol of the old yin and yang, where there's the dark and the light, and within the center of each one is the opposite color. And it's the energy produced in sometimes that conflict is pretty intense. But I think that's crucial to remember what you said, Bruce, and Lynn and Gail, some of what you both brought up as well, that changing that conversation. Here's Biden is talking about ways to bring manufacturing up in the country, try to regain some manufacturing jobs. I don't know that we would have had such a strong statement for that if the right supporting Trump had not done what they did. It's important. Mm-hmm. I struggle with it myself, but it's so important for me to remember not to just dismiss.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and part of that is Trump is not a right-wing politician. Mm-hmm. Trump is a populist. And the nature of populism is to appeal to the people and to what the people want. And that's what Trump has a magical ability to do in many ways, is to find those sort of resentments, those feelings of failure, and appeal to him in the American public. And that's why half of the American public voted for him, even in this recent election. And so there's something there that liberals and progressives need to learn about how we relate to those people who have been bypassed by the global economy, by, sort of what's happening with the information revolution. Not everybody comes along with those kinds of changes. And Trump was able to identify that and appeal to it. And we're going to be right back with another Trump president in 4 years, unless the Biden administration can address those issues.
Lynn, or Gail.
Gail had her hand up first, sorry.
Go ahead, Lynn, if you're ready.
No, I'm not.
My mistake.
Along the lines of thinking about some of the positives that come out of Trump, I don't give him actual credit for actually addressing the issues of the populist movement. I think he creates the illusion that he's addressing the issues, when actually oftentimes what's happening is he's pointing at immigrants, he's pointing at the poor, he's pointing fingers in order to keep the focus off the actual issue, which is huge income inequality. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. And so I think this is a segue into maybe the last question that we have time to address. How will history treat this administration? So what we have is an ability to expose the country's ills, perhaps an inability to address the majority of them. A president who is claiming to have won an election before the votes are counted. And we have Republicans who may soon be overlooking or not recalling or trying to excuse their lack of opposition to this administration. So maybe, Bruce, you might start us. How do you think historians will then rate these factors when they come to putting Trump in the list of other presidents?
Well, I think, he's going to be down near the bottom, along with Franklin Pierce and a few of those kind of folks. But at the same time, he's going to have an impact like Andrew Jackson did. I mean, you got to remember, Andrew Jackson was the first president elected from west of the Appalachian Mountains, and who was not from either Virginia or Massachusetts. So every president up until Andrew Jackson came from two states, and were essentially related to the founders of the Republic. Andrew Jackson was this sort of populist, out west kind of crazy guy in most of their minds. And that's the role that Trump has played in American politics at this point. Not that he's of the stature of Andrew Jackson, but he carries some of the racism and some of the sort of terrible aspects of Jacksonian democracy. But he also represents that populist side of Jacksonian democracy. And so I think historians are going to be, Trump is going to be rated relatively low as a president, but he's also going to be viewed as an influential figure in changing the direction of American democracy.
Mm-hmm. Lynn?
I think about the major media being tied to the cities and slanted very left, because they're believers in truth and the scientific process and publishing variations and improvements on the truth all the time. What I think will be interesting is how will middle America view Trump and Trump's minions, and how will they view it and see it? That's to me what's critical.
That's it. The fairy's coming in, folks.
Overrated. We will soon find out as historians put Trump onto the agenda.
Okay, folks. Barry is here. See you next week.